Hey y'all, I know what you're thinking. I ghosted y'all. I sure damn did. A lot has happened since our last episode went up, and I kind of dropped the ball on this one. However, I'm just giving you a heads up. I did started recording this episode, and it's obvious you could tell by the title of it. It's going to be a messy one. There's no specific topic on this one. I recorded bits and pieces as, you know, a lot. Like I said, a lot has been happening over a couple months. And so instead of sitting down and doing one set topic, I'm just going to share, you know, my thoughts and my feelings on a lot of things that has happened over the last 3 to 4 months since, you know, the last episode. So to all my friends listening, thank you for being on my ass about, you know, the next episode. And for the folks listening who, you know, who were always asking when's the next episode, here's the episode. It's gonna be a long one, so I suggest you pull up with a cup of water, a cup of tea, and maybe a little vodka or rum on the side. I don't know. Take your pick. Take your pick. Like, I don't know what to tell you. It's gonna cover a lot of stuff, and some parts might be a little deep, some parts might be a little jovial, but I just need you to be on this ride with me, all right? All right.
Walk like a boss. Miss me with the shit, now I flex when it costs. You a heartbreak killer, must hurt to see me floss. You got your wish, gotta...
Hey y'all, hey y'all, hey y'all. Hey, I missed y'all. I sure did. I'm not gonna lie and say I didn't. I did. I miss y'all so much. And I know you're probably thinking, you're a horrible friend. You ditched us for months, for weeks on end, not a word. You know, at least I checked in on y'all. I posted like once or twice, you know, to check the temperature or something. So, you know, give me some credit. Give me some credit. I'm bugging. But for those who are tuning in for the first time ever, my name is Debbie, aka it's Debbie J on the internet, aka Instagram. And I want to say thank you for tuning into my podcast, A Cup of Honest Tea, where if the tea ain't honest, what's this point of spilling it? And for you, my listeners, what I would like for you to expect, especially the new ones coming in, listening to this one for the first time, it gets real here. I don't really edit a lot of things. Everything comes out, and once it comes out, I splice it together and then upload it so you can listen. So we keep it real here. We keep it a little raw, you know. I will give trigger warnings if necessary, because, you know, sometimes the topic could be a little triggering. But just letting y'all know, we keep it honest here. Very honest. Sometimes a little too honest. So if this may not be your cup of tea, that's okay. I'm just giving you a heads up now, all right? And for those who are listening as well, further down line, there's going to be a part of the episode where we're going to be discussing sexual assault and sexual violence. I will give you a heads up so you know if you want to skip over those like couple, 3 minutes, 4 minutes and not hear that part, I'll give you a heads up just so you know. But yeah, we're going to have a little discussion about sexual assault and sexual violence. So I'm giving you all a heads up. And you know what? Let's just dive into it real quick. So before, you know, I start talking about all the topics and stuff, I want to share with y'all what I've been reading. So I've been reading, thanks to Denise, aka Chasing Denise on Instagram. I've been reading What Happened to You. Technically, it's on Audible, so I've been listening to What Happened to You. And this was written by Oprah and what's his name? Darn it. I forgot his name already. But this was written by Oprah and Dr. Bruce D. Perry, right? And this book basically explores how we can better understand each other and ourselves by simply addressing the vulnerability that comes from facing our trauma and adversity at a young age. In the meantime, it kind of covers the scientific and emotional insights on behavioral patterns and how we can shift our approach to trauma. So basically, in what I've listened to so far, it's he sits down and talks about us thinking back to when we have traumatic experiences, right? And how they now manifest now. Our brain protects us without us realizing that our brain is protecting us, right? It's not something we can control. It's just that our brain has now created this defense mechanism for us that when we now end up in a situation that seems similar to the previous traumatic experience, it now decides to protect us. And it's not something we can control. And the example he gave us was the situation with an Army veteran who went through the war, and when he came back, he was still suffering from PTSD, and it was intense, like intense to the point that sometimes he would go on dates with his then girlfriend and things would happen, and he would have like a lapse in memory, and you know, she would just be in the corner looking at him like, oh my God, what's going on? I don't know how to help him. And when they sat down and they broke it down that way, he was better able to understand and navigate that. Granted, he never really told us the end of the story for that one, but that was the perfect example he gave. So if you are trying to understand how your mind and your body reacts into trauma, especially familiar trauma, and it doesn't have to be obvious. Like a lot of times we think of trauma as in like physical abuse, but even think emotional abuse. Just think of like underlying things that may trigger you in your day-to-day that your brain protects you that you just aren't able to pick up on. Sometimes you're able to just sit down and write that out. So if you're interested in a book like that, I say take a pick. It's easier listening to it on Audible. I feel like if I would be like actually reading a book, I probably would have fell asleep. So if you're more of one of those people who like to listen while traveling or just listening while doing things, definitely. Another book I'm rereading, technically I'm rereading it, is Attached. I think I've mentioned this book before, and this book basically talks about our attachment styles, and how we create these attachment styles based on our first experiences with our caregivers. And depending on our experiences with caregivers, we could either be secure, anxious, or avoidant. I think there's another one which is like disorganized, but I haven't gotten to that point yet. But so far, my big takeaways is that if the attachment is not just the desire to be around another person, it could just simply be an emotional bond that, you know, most people share. Like, it doesn't have to be like this burning desire of, ooh, I have to attach to this person. It's just an emotional bond that people share, and it's normal. There's some attachments that to others that are very healthy, and it's okay. And a lot of times, folks like me who struggle with anxiety, we tend to worry more about the bonds that we have with people or those closest to us. You know, we're often worried that, you know, the relationship and the dynamic of the relationship and the amount of love and, I guess, support and affection we receive versus what we give. And I also learned about the avoidant attachment style. And baby, I think at one point I probably was an anxious avoidant. But let me break it down real quick. All right, so like I said, there are three attachment styles, and I got stuck on chapter 6 of the book Attached, right? This one was mostly focused on avoidant behavior, but before we get there, I want to describe the other two before getting to avoidant, because that was a heavy one. But anyway, let's start with the description for the anxious attachment style in an adult. And these are a few signs, just so you know. There are probably more out there, but these are just a handful of signs that normally people describe, or, you know, doctors would describe for those who are anxious attaching. So you have the tendency to put others and their needs first, aka people pleasing. You have this desire for relationships and intimacy, and you struggle to be alone. Being alone feels very lonely all the time. You don't like being by yourself. You're always seeking approval and reassurance from others. Again, people pleasing. You have clingy and needy behaviors in relationships. There is this strong fear of rejection and criticism and abandonment. You lack strong sense of self as well, and may possess low self-esteem. You're always overanalyzing and worrying about everything in terms of relationships excessively. Jealousy and frustration when your partner is unavailable and inattentive. Jealousy, not frustration. Hell yeah. I guess we're on the anxious scale. And the last one I have is like easily ignoring and misreading signs of relational issues. I think there's a chance my ass is like 99.9 anxious attachment back in the day, you know. I feel like looking at these signs in this list, there are definitely at least 7 or 8 of these things I've knocked off the list within the last year with my therapist. Thank God I was able to develop a strong sense of self. I've been able to work on my self-care and putting my needs and my boundaries first. I've been able to spend time alone without feeling like I'm alone or feeling like I need to be in company or intimacy of others. Approval from others? What is that, nigga? You don't pay my rent. In terms of clingy and needy behaviors in relationships, I feel like I'm technically super clingy and needy right around my cycle. And then when my cycle ends, I'm still a little clingy, but it's kind of like, hey, I want to cuddle for 5 minutes, and then I cuddle for 5 minutes, and then I'm like, all right, I'm done. Kind of clingy. So I guess maybe that's not super clingy. Fear of rejection, still there. Not as strongly, though. Still there. Fear of abandonment, yep, still there. Not as strongly, though. Criticism, I feel like that depends on the source. Like, if I don't know you from Timbuktu and a hole in the wall, like, your criticism, I don't know. Becoming extremely upset when receiving disapproval, nah, not that upset. Jealousy and frustration, overanalyzing. I definitely be overanalyzing shit. Like, I'm not even gonna lie, I be overanalyzing everything. I'm 10 steps ahead, thinking about everything, everyone. Okay, what's gonna happen next? Like, I wouldn't say excessively, though. I just overanalyze everything. But yeah, these are the signs of an anxious attaching adult. So I guess I'm on the scale of anxious, y'all. I feel like that's where I'm at. That's where I'm at. And I'll just bring this to my therapist tomorrow and see what we could do. And the next one is secure attachment, right? As adults, secure attachment looks like having trusting and lasting relationships, having good self-esteem, being able to share your feelings and all the shebang, emotional shebang, with your partners and friends without feeling guilty, and being able to seek out social support, being able to seek out help without a problem. And that's it. That's literally secure attachment is just saying you're just a great human being who just loves everyone. And, you know, you have no problem asking for help as well. You have no problem helping somebody else. You have no problem, you know, giving people space and understanding we all need space as humans to grow and be okay. Like, it's like the goal to have secure attachment with self as well as with others. And then lastly, like I mentioned, we were going to go through avoiding, because I said that last chapter was that was like the ding ding for me. So avoidant behavior usually stem from when a child in the younger age or younger years, when their caregiver doesn't provide for them emotionally or whenever they're in a traumatic experience or distress. And so this child then turns around basically and has to tend to their own needs, has to empathize for themselves, take care of themselves. And this child then grows up to be a very independent adult. And you might be thinking, that's not a bad thing. It's not. There's nothing wrong with being independent. It's just what comes with the underlying of all that. Because the signs of being avoidant looks like avoiding emotional closeness in relationships, or like, you know, those important emotional conversations to bring you close to your partner, those, you know, intimate moments that does not require sex. Like, that is a struggle for an avoidant. Or even like feeling like your partner is being clingy if they just want to get closer to you emotionally. All of a sudden, their need to get closer to you, you feel like, okay, I need to step back because, you know, you're a little too clingy and needy for my ass. Like, take 3 steps back, please. And then when difficult situations happen, you tend to withdraw and cope with them alone versus having someone there. And granted, you don't need people to like fix your problems for you, but it's okay to ask for help. You don't have to withdraw into your turtle shell by yourself, but avoidants do that. Or they suppress their feelings whenever they're having, you know, moments of difficult feelings, difficult emotions, or emotions they're not able to describe or explain. And because of that, they would just suppress it instead of just exploring it. They avoid sulking sometimes when things happen, or they'll suppress negative memories. Sometimes they'll tune out or withdraw from uncomfortable or unpleasant conversations simply because it's uncomfortable. The fearing of rejection, again, I feel like fearing of rejection is like a human thing, regardless of your attachment style. They have a, like I said before, a very strong sense of independence, having feelings of high self-esteem, and sometimes could be overly focused on their own needs and comforts. And you might be wondering why I'm talking about attachment styles. Because I realize as someone who's an anxious person, in terms of my attachment style to others, I'm secure in self, but I'm anxious in terms of my connections to others. I'm always like attracted to or attached in terms of like a lot of connections I've had in my past to avoidance. And when I read up about this, it seems like it's perfectly normal. Anxious and avoidance are always at it with each other. Right? It seems like the avoidant pulls away. The anxious is like, where are you going? Come here. Let me love you. And the anxious is like, nah, you too clingy. I'm stepping back. And so the anxious is like, oh shit, I'm being rejected. I'm gonna step back. And then the avoidant is like, no, where you're going? Come back. You see this little like tug of war situation? Yo. When I read up on this, I was like, I need to sit down and map this out with my therapist and figure shit out, because I need to understand why. Like, what's in the sauce? What is it? Like, and if you are listening to this, I really suggest that we learn about our attachment styles. Because I learned that even when I sat down with my therapist and we talked about where my anxiety came from in terms of abandonment and rejection, or even trusting people when they say certain things, all came back from 2 experiences with my dad that I thought were completely innocent. One of them was just him not getting me the crayons that he said he was going to get me. One of. Right? And that trickled down with a whole lot of traumatic things in itself that I didn't know I had to unpack as an adult. So if you're listening to this, definitely sit down, you know, assess yourself. If you got a journal, write this shit out and be like, okay, let's figure out what my attachment style is. I don't know if there's a quiz for this. I didn't take a quiz. But if there's one, go take one. If you got a therapist, you could check in with your therapist and see if that's something you're finna do. But, bruh, go figure out your attachment style. I'm sure once you do, it will be such an eye-opener. Go. I'm telling you again. Go. And if you don't want to go, you could always read Attached. It's a very good book. I have it in Audible and in print. So if somebody's trying to borrow my book, just let me know. All right. And before you ask, what am I going to read next? I already got that picked up. Thanks to Chasing Denise again. The next one I'm going to read is Start. It's called It Didn't Start With You by Mark Woling. And basically it's about showing us how traumas of our parents or grandparents, and even our great grandparents, can live in our unexplained depression, in our anxiety, in our fears, our phobias, obsessive thoughts, or like physical symptoms, what some people might call secondary PTSD. So yeah, I'm looking forward to reading that one, but I need to finish the other two first because I can't keep picking up new books to read. You ever had that situation where you're like, fuck, you pick up one book and you start reading it and you pick up a second book? Yeah, I'm at this point where I was like, I can't pick up another book because I'm already reading Jambalaya. And then I have these other two books, self-help books that I'm reading. I think I'm good on the reading subject. I think by the time I record another episode, I've been done with these books and I'll probably move on to another three. But if you do have some suggestions for me, by all means, you know, you could always comment, send me a DM, and I'll be happy to check that shit out. And that's on period because I'm a bibliophile. And if you don't know why that is, Google is your friend. But all right, let's move on from the heavy shit, because I know I probably bored half of y'all to death already. And that's okay. That means moving into other stuff, it's a little lighter. You know, you could grab your cocktail now. Whether that's made with vodka or rum, you could grab that and we could just sip on this real slowly. But what's been going on? This is now where I'm gonna spill the tea on what's been going on, really, on this side, and my thoughts. So therapy has been going well. We've been making a lot of improvements. I have seen a change in myself recently where I realize, like, whenever someone is talking to me about something or sharing information or like having a moment, I'm able to take a step back and not take it personally. And before I was unable to do that. I was unable to regulate and I was unable to like literally realize what the conversation is before reacting. So I've learned to simply listen versus to react. And in this moment, I've come to the conclusion that 90% of the conversations I've had with people were just pure projections. And in those moments, in letting them know that their projection, their bullshit, most of those connections ended. And at first I was a little bummed because then I brought this to my therapist. She's like, you know, the more you grow emotionally, mentally, physically, spiritually, your views on things will change. Your views on what you allow in your life will change. And when you start to assess your boundaries and reinforce them, the people who were comfortable with the old boundaries are now going to be uncomfortable with you stepping into this new place in your life. And you're just going to have to be okay with losing these people because they're not meant to be with you where you're going. And so I'm sharing that with you all. Like, if you're in this season right now where you're growing into your best self, into your higher self, and the folks that used to be with you that you thought were your day ones, it's okay if they're no longer around. That means they were your day ones to your day 30. And now you know, you're in a space of day 31 and on, you're going to have a new set of day 31s and on. And that's okay. It doesn't mean you're a bad person, less of a person. It just simply means you're now in a space where you're going to have better and healthier relationships and connections with people. But in doing this therapy shit, I'm not gonna lie, I was having this conversation with Sorrell where I was like, there are some days where you just want to cuss a nigga out, where you just want to revert back into a toxic moment or toxic behavior just to prove a point. But you can't even do that because all you hear in your head is either one, your therapist, or two, you know better. So you're like, fuck, I know better. I can't go back to that. Like, I legit spent all this money and this hard work to get over that shit. I can't revert for that. But there are days, I'm not gonna lie, where I dead ass just wanna be passive aggressive. Where I just wanna be a petty ass bitch. Where somebody says something and I'll be like, I wish you would, ugly ass motherfucker. Like, I really want to revert back into that space, especially when people say certain things or accuse me of something. Like, for example, if somebody I'm with, like, I'm loyal, you know, I'm all like into them, and then they accuse me of cheating, I'm like, yo, do you really want me to go cheat? Because we finna figure this out. Like, I could go outside and be a fuck boy if you want. Like, we could do that. And you know, my friends will tell you, I'm very petty and spiteful sometimes. So the fact that I've gone through therapy and I'm saying, nah, I'm just gonna sit and chill and I'm not about this drama shit, y'all should really understand, therapy works. But we need cheat days. I need cheat days where I could just be like, all right, I'm finna be petty today. And you know what? I could go back to my therapist and she won't judge me. Like, but I think she will. I think she will. I feel like if I was to go in one day and say, hey, Jill, so I'm finna get a day off or a cheat day to just be petty. You cool with that? Like, I don't want to come back here and tell you stories and then, you know, you finna judge me. I feel like she would look at me sideways and like, so we went through all this work for the last year and your ass is telling me you want to revert to bad behavior for one day. Why? What's the satisfaction? Was it worth it? Like, how is it that when people who work out get cheat days, but people who do therapy can't really get cheat days? Because it's not a cheat day, because then you go back to therapy the next day and you're like, so I fucked up. And then you fix it. Like, fuck it. But that's not what we're here to talk about. We're talking about what's happening in my life. Either way, I do have some good news, though. Shorty moved into her new apartment. Can I get a round of applause? Yay! We moved into our new apartment. We're basically settled in. I've been here for a minute now. We're settled in. We're waiting on a few things. The last thing left for me to really put together for real, is the dining room. But I'm not gonna lie. This adulting shit is for the birds. Every time I go outside when I moved into this apartment, I swear I was swiping my card so much that I looked over to my friend. I was like, yo, we going to Dollar Tree real quick. So the whole time they were like, yo, let's go to Dollar Tree. Let's go to Dollar Tree. And I'm like, nah, I need quality shit, yo. Take me to Marshall's. Take me to Walmart. Take me here. And they're like, okay, nigga, whatever. By the third store, when I swapped my card, I was like, nah, let's pull up to Dollar Tree real quick. Because I can't do this. I'm now thinking about OnlyFans and thotting and bopping and getting a sugar daddy by the time I done hit the third store. Like, why? Why is being an adult so expensive? I feel like every time I turn around and wipe my ass, I'm paying bills. That's serious. Like, seriously? Nah, I feel like as an adult, the government should give us allowance each week just for simply existing in this treacherous place, because Lord, I don't know if I'm finna do this adult thing for a very long time. I think I'm gonna call up my mama real quick and just be like, yo, ma, so what you said was right. You know, I really should have paid attention to being great at being like a kid and stuff, but now I'm an adult. I feel like I want to revert back to being a kid. So what happened to that spare room? No, but seriously, y'all, why is adulthood so expensive? And then outside is mad expensive at that. Like, what? Nah, I need a break. But I'm not gonna lie, though, I am all settled in and I'm all like moved in. It feels really good to be in my own space. Granted, I feel like I'm cleaning every other day, but it just feels open and clear. I find myself a little bit more positive, able to move about in my own space, and I am excited about that. Like, I had this shit on my mood board since 2020, and then 2020 happened with the whole pandemic. So it didn't happen the way I thought it did, but it seems like everything just aligned perfectly. Now, with alignment, of course, as soon as all this happened, we went right into a fucking retrograde, right? So shit was going left. I was like, this retrograde had hands. When I said shit was going left, shit was going right, shit was going up, down, and in a circle, a bitch was out here at one point confused and bedazzled, because I was like, where are these exes coming from? Where did you find my number? Who are these people? And then it's like everyone I knew that were in a relationship either broke up or got divorced. At this point, I was like, okay, this is something deeper. Because what the fuck is going on? Right? Either way, we survived that retrograde. And I end up having a conversation with a friend, and I'm gonna pose this question to y'all, because it could just simply be me being a little prudish, you know. But have you ever tried doing it on your cycle? No, deadass. Like, if you've tried or actually did it on your cycle, raise your hand real quick. I need to take a census. And if you need me to know for real, you could just DM me and say you did. I'm not going to tell nobody. That's between me and you. Let me sip this tea real quick. Yeah. It's between me and you. So you could share it. Like, just let me know. Have you ever done it? It was posed to me, and I'm like, I remember doing it once, right? When I was younger. And I will never do it again. Not only was it messy and just weird, I'm not gonna lie, I did feel good, but it was just too much. It was way too much. It was a lot going on. But I'm just kind of curious, what makes us want to do that? Aside from the mess and it feeling good, what makes y'all want to sit down and say on the daily, like, I want to do this every single cycle? Because I know of people who do this every single cycle. And I'm just curious. I'm not judging y'all. I want to know. I was told, you know, it helps with cramps, you know. And because you're already lubricated, you know, it makes everything a little easier, you know. But for folks who don't use toys and don't have, you know, a penile organ, how does having sex work? Because, you know, putting your whole face down there, I mean, ooh, hands, do you use gloves? Like, I'm not even that would be sounding like a prude. I'm dead ass. Like, how does sex happen on your cycle without a toy and without a penis? Like, what does that look like? How does that work? I'm not going to Google this, because I feel like Google is going to give me one of those generic answers. I want to hear personal stories. So if this is you, you know, if you want to submit anonymously, just send me a DM on A Cup of Honesty. Like I said, we're going to keep it anonymous. I'm not going to tell your business unless you say I can. All right. But do let us just know, because I'm just curious. I'm really just curious. And while we're on the topic of sex and intimacy, right? Why is it that folks, and this is coming from having multiple conversations with multiple people, I feel like when folks get into relationships or into like the dating scene, they have all these like unrealistic expectations of what the partnership should look like, or the connection should look like, what their partners should be like or should do or should look like. Not realizing that having these unrealistic expectations is preventing you from actually experiencing an easy love, an amazing experience, an amazing journey. Like, your experience, not even your experience, your unrealistic expectations is your barrier to a life-changing experience. Oh, let me say that again. Your unrealistic expectations are a barrier to life-changing experiences. So, with that being said, like, when y'all start dating, do y'all even, like, sit down and write a list out? Like, this is what I want my partner to be like. Because a lot of times, we don't. We really just be, like, going with the flow. And you going with the flow of, okay, they're attractive. This is what makes me attracted to them. I'm going to see where this goes. But it's like, but do they compliment you? Do they add to your life? Do you see a future with them? Because at this point, then if you don't, you're kind of like just wasting time. So do y'all ever make a list? I think my therapist told me to do this a few weeks back, to like make a list of what I expect, or not even expect, what I would want in a future partner. And one of the non-negotiables I came up with, like, I need them to go to therapy. I want them to go to therapy. Because it's kind of like unfair on my end that I'm doing all this personal work, all this emotional work on myself to bring my best self to the table, to then continuously meet them at the table, unpacking and dealing with their projections and their shit. Yes, partnerships and connections, you know, you should be able to work on yourself separately, then come to the table and do your conflict resolutions and figure things out together. But separately, you should be handling your shit. Your partner is not, or the person you're with or dating, is not your toilet where you just bring your shit and drop it. Like, nah. That's not their job. They're not TSA. They don't carry your luggage for you. That's your luggage, boo-boo. Unpack your shit and then come to the table. Because it's unfair to watch. I've seen friends who are dating people or have dated people where, you know, they're doing all this emotional work and working on themselves and going through it, and then have an experience with this person and it's like, hey, this, you know, triggered me. And it's like, okay, understandable. I'm glad, you know, we're able to have this conversation that this triggers you. But self-awareness comes in when you're able to say, this triggered me, but I understand this is not your fault. Therefore, I'm not going to hold you to this standard of why I am triggered. I am triggered because my ex did X, Y, and Z. For example, and this is me making it plain. Let's say I had an ex who was a liar and cheater, ain't shit nigga, right? Think of all the dirtiest shit they could have done, right? They've done it. So you meet a nice person after them, right? Really great. They love on you. They take care of you. You know, they're honest. They're open. All the good shit, right? And then they do something like, I don't know, hug a friend too tight on the way out the door. And you catch a glimpse of that shit. And you're like, y'all fucking. What? I'm sorry. Mm-mm. Sweetheart, you were just triggered. You were just triggered. What have they done to make you think that they're fucking around on you, except that they hugged a friend too tight? This is where self-regulation and self-awareness comes in. Okay, you saw them hug a friend too tight on the way out the door. Cool. But they've always been honest and open with you. They've always told you how they felt. They've always showed up. They've never showed themselves to be dishonest and a cheater. So what gave you the idea that they've done that? Nothing. So then you sit in those feelings of being triggered and uncomfortable. And then once you sit in those feelings and you're able to address those feelings with self, then you're able to sit down with them and say, hey, babe, so earlier I noticed this and I was a little triggered. So my energy was a little off and I want to apologize. Or, you know, you have that talk with them so they understand why you were triggered and you may have shown up in a way that was distasteful. So, people, when it comes to relationships and these unrealistic expectations we have, do understand a part of it looks like doing the personal work on your own. And I'm not saying you need to be fully healed, because there's this notion that you have to be fully healed and put together in this perfect human for someone to show up and love you fully, which is bullshit. I think I've said this before. This is bullshit. They sell us this idea of perfectionism. And when it comes to people, people are not perfect. People will continuously grow. People will continuously change and build into better versions of their previous selves. And when you decide to date them or be in a relationship with them or marry them, you have made the commitment to go through those changes with them as they develop into better versions of themselves. So this perfect human that you're looking for does not exist. Do you have humans who are better versions of themselves that you're going to keep finding yourself committed to and working things through with and building with? Yes. But this expectation that this perfect person who's going to have it all together and look perfectly and talk and walk perfectly and put it down right every fucking time and they're making six figures. Like, these, the list that you've created based on these Disney movies they had us watching, I'm going to need you to reevaluate them. All right? Being able to twerk. That's a skill that could be learned. So if that skill is on your list of partnership expectations, I'm going to need you to question yourself and your life decisions at this point. Are you looking for compassion? Or are you looking for a twerker? What exactly? I mean, you could have both. But what are your priorities? The other day, and this is me being frank, the other day was babysitting. Two kids with someone, and I was looking at them and I was like, yo, wow, the way you handling these kids, I'm like, is there a possibility of starting a family with you? I mean, you're doing a mighty good job. Granted, these are not our kids. These are not your kids. But it's the level of patience and the level of understanding and openness and this just overall kindness of dealing with children that when I see that, I'm like, okay, this is someone with a possibility, right? Because children, I want to have children in the future. I don't want to be partnered with someone who don't know how to deal with kids. I don't. I'm not putting my children through any traumatic experiences because you have not unpacked your shit yet or just don't know how to deal with them. So in me seeing something like that, I was like, shit, I'm hooked. Don't tell them that. But yes, y'all, I need y'all to address these unrealistic relationship expectations y'all be having because it be getting y'all fucked up. It be really getting y'all fucked up. Alright, I'm just saying this with all the love in my heart. So don't get mad at me. Don't get mad at me. I love y'all. I really do. But I want us all to also experience healthy love. Not just with self, but with others. Whether that's platonic or intimate. Alright? Now that we've gotten through that part, I know... Although I was talking about intimacy just now in terms of partnerships, I do want to ask y'all, in terms of your friendship circle, do you feel like it's a handcuff, a noose, or an open space for love, support, inspiration, and communication? Did I hurt any feelings or like snatch any edges with this one? It was just, because, you know, it's a solid question. Me just want more. Cause me over here, so I watch people friend up with everybody, and none of them add to your life, and they not do nothing for you. They not do nothing. They just did it. They just did. Oh, I forgot. What I was saying was, you know, cause I've been noticing. I'm sorry, y'all. I've been noticing that a lot of folks are surrounded by friends who do nothing. Like they call these people friends, and these people do not add to your life. They don't add substance. They don't add in any way at all. And it's like, but why are they here? Because the way I look at friendship circles, they're an open space for love, for honesty, for support, beautiful communication, inspiration, reciprocity, respect, loyalty. Like, it's a big open circle filled with everything that I need. And it's also that circle where I'm able to give and support them in what they need. But if you have friendships with people where you realize you're not growing, like, look at the time they've been around you. Have you grown in any way, shape, or form? Have they added anything into your life? Have they helped you with a business? Have they helped you grow or even, like, add to your reading skills? Like, what have they done to help you as a person? What lessons have they taught you? Because if they're not doing anything for you, because as far as I'm concerned, if you're not growing, you're dead. They're either a handcuff in the sense of they're holding you back from the future or the potential of your future and the amazingness of what that looks like. Or they're a noose and they're killing you slowly, slowly, but surely killing you emotionally, mentally, spiritually. Like, really check your circle, y'all, because your circle determines what your future looks like. My dad always said, show me your friends and I'll tell you who you are. And he ain't never lied. Because when I was younger, I ain't had no friends. And I remember my first therapist said to me, in order to be a friend or to have friends, you must be a friend. And I thought to myself, bullshit. But then it's like, immediately when I started working on myself and deciding to actually be a friend, I started having and developing all these loving, supportive friendships that I have. I'm not saying we never butt heads. There's sometimes I get on some of them nerves and sometimes they get on my nerves, but we do understand we're different people and we still love and care for each other. The support and the love will always be there. Being able to develop that out of authenticity, genuine love, like, it's an amazing feeling. And I want that for you all. Do not bound yourself to friendships out of loyalty that literally suck you dry and kill you, that hold you back from your purpose. Out of loyalty, you're deterring your purpose out of loyalty. You're deterring your legacy and the wealth and the flourishing, or even the flourishment of your legacy, out of loyalty, out of niceness. All friendships that end don't have to end with animosity. It could literally just be a genuine disconnect where you both could sit down and say, hey, this friendship has reached its peak. This is as far as we're going to be able to go with each other and be able to separate with love and move on. But sometimes I find, and I've done this in the past, where I've held on to a friendship long enough to realize, oh, nah, I got to let this shit go. Not because I hate them, but we weren't helping each other anymore. The friendship has now turned toxic. You weren't helping me grow. I wasn't helping you grow. Like, we're just here going back and forth, developing, what do you call it? Develop bad feelings for each other. We don't need to get there. Especially when everything developed out of genuine love. So, folks, check your friend circle. I'm not saying this to be an asshole. I know I said I was going to be a little light on the info after that, you know, therapy talk and attachment talk and shit. But seriously, check your friend circle. Check your friend circle. It's necessary. While I'm here talking all this shit about relationships and retrograde and fucking all your cycle and shit. So finally, they've made Juneteenth a holiday. I know. I wasn't expecting that shit. I really wasn't. Because at the end of the day, you're telling me Juneteenth, which was naturally celebrated by Black folks, you know, to celebrate culture and shit. You know, you're telling me now that white folks get a day off and essential workers, which are now made up mostly of Black and brown people, still gotta go work. The fuck? In that case, like, give us Juneteenth back. We don't need it to be a holiday because we're giving you other you know, demands, like, you know, not having us killed, shot dead in our cars and shit by doing the bare minimum of existing, you know, by police officers. And y'all can't figure that shit out. But you're like, you know what, let's just give you Juneteenth. Okay. Thanks, I guess. Way to gaslight the fuck out of us. I don't know. And for all those, I'm not saying not to be excited about Juneteenth. We could be excited about this. You could be excited about it while criticizing the government about their bullshit. My thing is, I'm excited about Juneteenth being a holiday because we get it to be nationally recognized, you know, because it's important to us and for us. However, you're having shit like lynching, which is still legal in some states, by the way. If y'all didn't know, there's some states where if you get lynched, it's okay, right? And you have went ahead and decided that you're going to make Juneteenth a holiday while making lynching illegal has still not passed as a federal crime. That shit is still sitting on the desk in the fucking Capitol. Niggas ain't citing shit. But y'all quick to give us Juneteenth. Is anybody else not worried about that shit? Because I am. Because out here, people could just lynch us left and right. But it's like, but y'all got Juneteenth, though. I don't know about that. It's almost like racism. Look at it. Where you bring racism to a white person and their response is, but y'all had a black president, though. What the fuck that got to do with anything? They ain't got to do with shit. If anything, you should have noticed that racism got worse and a little bit more aggressive and in your face. More Becky's and, you know, John's. And, you know, I don't know what you call them folks. Jesse's. Started to catch more hands. People started recording them and they started, you know, being held accountable for their stupid ass actions. It didn't make things better. So I don't understand why I think giving us Juneteenth will make us forget that y'all still didn't sign a bill to make lynching a federal crime. Two, police are still shooting us left, right, and center for simply being human and doing bare minimum shit like driving the car with an air freshener sticking out the back of the window. And then on top of that, in doing this, you're over, and I'm saying over there, in terms of the government, dipping their hands and their noses in overseas shit. And if anybody knows me, you know that I'm one of those folks where I'm like, handle your shit at your house first before you go to other people's shit. Like, priorities, my nigga. Take care of your house and get your shit in order first before you try to handle the argument in another man's house. And while you at it, don't play ally to the bad guy. You don't know what I'm talking about? I want you to look up the Israeli and Palestinian conflict. And another note, when you do, do not read American sources. Read the international sources. The American sources are dumpster fire trash cans for dummies. Plus, we all know the government likes to twist narratives on countries before doing some fuck shit. And if you think I'm kidding, I want you to think of one word, Haiti. Again, if you have access to Google, because it's free, please use international sources, because more than likely you're going to find the information necessary and it's less biased. I'm not going to go into much details about the Haiti thing because I'm still unfolding and bringing in knowledge about it, and I'm not going to talk about something I lack information on. If I'm ignorant on it, we ain't going to talk about it. I'm just going to bring it to your attention so you can read about it too, because bitch, I have free Google too. But yeah, I want to be excited for Juneteenth. I don't know how to have those two feelings coexist where I'm like, I'm excited for Juneteenth, but at the same time, I'm like, but y'all still killing us though. Y'all still doing fuck shit to us though. Like, I don't know. This is an abusive, emotionally abusive relationship I don't like and I don't want no parts of. And it brings me to the point of watching black women in sports right now, where you have Simone Biles, amazing gymnast, GOAT, greatest of all times, period. They're basically changing rules because they're saying she's doing too much dangerous shit. So they changed the rules so her, basically, her competitors could get a little bit more edge. But you can't really get a little bit more edge on a GOAT. So you're lowering the bar so people could participate in mediocrity. Isn't that the point of gymnastics, though? To push the bar, push the ceiling a little bit, be daring. And that is what she's doing. And she's doing it eloquently, flawlessly, without a hair out of place. And in doing that, they looked at her and say, wow, you're a threat. Let's change the rules so other people could, like, somehow come up. Why? If this was a white person, I'm sure you wouldn't be sitting here trying to change the rules for the competitors to come up. You wouldn't care, because then the whole point of you creating the sport in the first place is to prove your superiority as a white person. But that's the problem. Not because you're large in numbers and you created these ideals and these suppressive systems in place to keep people down, doesn't mean you're a superior race. Especially when you're the whitewashed version of black folks. Let's be clear. You're white because your ancestors were further away from the equator. And I said that without stuttering. So if anybody trying to meet me outside after saying that, just let me know. I could pull up. And then we talking about Sha'Carri. I make sure I pronounce her name right. Sha'Carri Richardson. Fast, beautiful, all with the wigs and the nails or whatever. And the first time I saw her, I was like, yo, shorty's bad with this. Amazing. And my friend Afika posted something the other day, and I took a screenshot of it. And it goes, I just want to say, I hope you guys love black girls with long nails and colored hair who are not bringing home medals to trashy ass America. They're in your classrooms, in your neighborhoods, in your praising Sha'Carri for her swag and confidence, which you should, because sis is goals, period. Don't call the next black girl aggressive or disruptive or ghetto when you see her. Start dismantling your anti-blackness on that's on that. And I brought this up because Sha'Carri, she popped up in the news doing her thing, and everybody's like, yes, sis, yes. The minute she got tested for weed and it came back positive, those same niggas who were on some, yes, Sha'Carri, yes, all of a sudden was like, sis, really? Oh my God. Why? Suspend her. Why the fuck would you do that? Shorty just lost her mother. She could smoke all the fucking weed she wants. It wasn't crack. She didn't do steroids. If anything, we should be applauding her. Like, how do you smoke weed and still race and be fast as fuck and beat all these people? As I take an edible and my ass is ready to go to bed. But then Afika brings back the point of, let's not even talk about the Sha'Carris of this world, our community. Let's talk about the Sha'Carris who don't run track and the Sha'Carris who don't participate in sports and bring home medals, but the Sha'Carris who sit in our classrooms, who sit in our churches, who sit on our trains, who sit in our restaurants, who simply exist with that same confidence and that same swag. Don't be out here belittling them and calling them aggressive and calling them ghetto and calling them everything but amazing. Work on your anti-blackness. And while you're at it, check to see if you have misogyny stuck inside of you too. Because some of you niggas be saying some dumb shit about our black girls. Just because they have weaves and nails and lashes. With or without, they're still amazing. They're still beautiful. And in this time, this is the perfect opportunity to keep reminding them that they are beautiful just the way they are. Because, you know, Europeans did create this system of what beauty really is and what beauty looks like. And holding them to that standard is unfair because our beauty is unmatched. And that is why They created their version of what a beauty standard is to make themselves, aka, again, feel superior. So, folks, as much as I love my black folks, I'm gonna need y'all to work on y'all anti-blackness real quick. Okay? That popped up. That just literally came off the top of the dome. I don't know why I need to bring shit here, but that came up at the top of the dome. But then that brings me to the next topic of Naomi Osaka. Shorty's goals. Period. Legit, she was like, in that case, I'm going to step out this tournament to take care of my mental health. Y'all could go fuck yourselves. I mean, she technically didn't say all that. I just translated how I read it. I mean, she was a little bit more eloquent with it, you know, but basically she was just like, fuck this tournament. I'm going to go take care of myself. You can suck this dick. And I want to give her props. Granted, she has access to financial resources to be able to do that. But I also want to give her and the black women who are standing up for themselves right now props, because they're putting themselves out there confidently, vulnerably, openly, and just be on some, this is who we are, and we're going to take care of ourselves while we at it. And you're going to love us or hate us, we don't care, but we're going to do what we do best, and that's to be the best version of ourselves, regardless of what sport we're playing. And we're going to kick your ass while doing it without apology. We're going to be unapologetic about it. And you're just going to have to be okay. Your mediocrity will show. And all these events that they're participating in, it's kind of hard not to take note that, yes, these sports were created to prove white people are quote unquote superior, that now black folks are now taking over. In taking it over, you have all these rules are now automatically changing. All of a sudden, there are these things to abide by, and you know, you have to do a press conference, and you have to do this, and this has to now change, and you need to stop doing that. So now you're adding and removing rules because black folks are now beating you at your own game that you created so you could look good. That's a slap in the face, but that's none of my business because, you know, I don't play sports anymore. But it's just fucked up that to watch us thrive so much only for them to turn around and be like, oop, you're thriving too quickly. Let's bring this down a notch. And it just hurts that sometimes in watching these young athletes go through these things, that sometimes black folks are the first to be up to talk shit. And it would be great if for once our first reaction isn't to talk shit, but to actually uplift. Our next generation needs us to show up for them. They need to see examples of compassion. They need to see examples of giving grace. They need to see examples of excellence in everything that we do. So show up, pull up, show them that we don't always just gotta be twerking and drinking all the time and partying. Like, we do know how to be socially conscious too. All right? And this is the trigger warning, because I just crossed my mind that I wanted to talk about this. Trigger warning, the next topic, sexual assault and sexual violence. If you need to skip over this, please do. It's probably gonna be another 3 minutes, but we're gonna talk about this Bill Cosby shit. So you mean to tell me this nigga got off of a technicality? A technifuckingality. He has assaulted so many folks, harmed so many folks. And he was let off on a technicality. But that's not the part that troubled me. The part that troubled me the most is the fact that you had black folks capping for this dumbass motherfucker. And I say dumbass motherfucker because he's a dumbass, stupid ass, nasty ass motherfucker. Capping for him because of a fucking TV show. Because he's Dr. Huxtable. Nigga, he played a character. which aided in how he approached and took advantage of folks in general. How he sexually harmed folks, traumatized them for the rest of their fucking life. And you're capping for him. Not realizing in you capping for him, you're now aligning with a predator who has now caused unfathomable harm that will continue to harm generations of women forward. A lot of victims now will feel the need, like, what's the point of coming forward? I'm going to come forward, tell my story. He may or may not go to jail, or you may just not believe me. I had this conversation earlier this week on my live. Be an ally. Be a fucking ally. And that looks like checking your... When you feel the need to ask questions like, why didn't you come forward? How about you just sit the fuck down and listen? How about you center the victim? What are their needs? What does justice look like for them? And after you figure that out, also dig deep within yourself and be like, well, if there's an inkling of you wanting to align yourself with a predator, ask yourself why. Why do you feel the need to align with a sexual predator? And don't be like, oh, well, you know, sometimes people lie. Sometimes people lie, true. But the victim is literally telling a story that not only emotionally and mentally caused them harm, but they had to endure physically. They took all the courage within themselves to share that story, and you chose not to believe them. So not only did you just break their hearts, you just gaslit the fuck out of them. So why should anyone at all confide in a person who aligns themselves with a predator? You're not a safe space. So I'll say this again. If you're trying to be an ally to a sexual assault or sexual violence victim or survivor, sit down, listen. Instead of centering the predator, center the victim. Center how they feel, what they think, what their needs and wants are moving forward. And you might be asking, well, you know, is there a way to give grace to the predators? I guess that depends on the victim, but I'm not giving grace to a motherfucker. You did what you did. You knew what you did. You can't say you didn't know. You knew. You were very conscious of your actions. And for that, no. Fuck you. I know that was a heavy one, but I really wanted to say that one because that shit was on my mind all week. Like, I just don't understand where we're always saying protect black women, protect women, protect them, protect your folks. But when they come to you for protection, you belittle them, you discourage them, you gaslight them, you throw them under the bus. But when something happens, we're the first to rise up and stand in protection of you all. We carry the burdens of it. We fight the fight for and even more for you. Is it really that hard to protect us? Or you just don't really give a fuck? But, you know, to each his own, I guess. But I've developed this thing where I've already told friends who may have certain point of views or partners with certain point of views, my mouth don't pay no rent. So if I end up at a table with anybody who is a predator sympathizer, I will not hesitate to tell you about yourself. I will not. I would tell you about you, your mama, your grandma, your cousin, your sister, cousin, brother. I will tell you off. And that's on that. And I say that with no apologies. Now that I'm done ripping you all to shreds. I'm sorry, y'all. Like I said, This is Pale Out Part 1. It's just a lot of topics that popped up over the last few weeks that I felt passionately about that I just wanted to share. We do have some exciting things coming down the pipeline, some new guests coming down the pipeline. So hopefully when we share these things, you're just as excited as I am, because I am very excited. But as we enter into this new week and the rest of the year, I'm going to challenge you to do two things. One, really sit with yourself and ask yourself, what excites you about living these days? What about your day-to-day or your week-to-week or month excites you? What makes you excited about living your day-to-day, living this life that you live? And secondly, check in on your friends. Even the strong ones, they may look strong, but check in on them anyway. I know we're still in a pandemic and things are finally opening back up, but that doesn't mean people aren't still grieving. And when I say grieving, it doesn't necessarily have to just be people who passed from the virus during the pandemic. They could like grieving a great job that they loved and now they have to find a new purpose in life. It could look like grieving a friendship that ended over a misunderstanding or whatever it is. Like, grief looks different for everyone, and everyone is going through their own personal struggles. So tap into your humanity a little bit and just check in on your friends, you know? And while you're checking on your friends, check in on yourself too. Make sure to encourage and affirm yourself too. As of late, I'll be doing affirmations in the morning because, you know, I love words of affirmation and encouragement. And I have affirmations that I say every morning when I wake up. And they're very helpful for me. And that's for checking in with the self. So don't forget, while you're checking in with others, check in with yourself. Before you leave, though, I want you to repeat after me. I am worthy and deserving simply because I am. I am not difficult. I do not ask for too much. Nothing is too over the top for me. I am deserving of all things love, all things light, all things peace. I am deserving of all the respect, all the effort, all the support, all the reciprocity, all the honesty, the authenticity, the patience, and understanding I give to others. As usual, take what you need, leave what you don't. Love you, mean it. Thank you again so much for joining me for this episode. Feel free to follow us on social media at A Cup of Honesty on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. We appreciate your support and we look forward to bringing you more honesty weekly. Bye.